You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And I hope you make a habit out of this each and every night. Some of you are joining us for the first time tonight. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. We've got some interesting things happening over in the UK, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I've been getting emails from various people in the UK telling me about things that they are seeing in the skies. I want to share one with you. I believe this one came in yesterday. Yesterday. It says, check out NASA TV and go to Live Space Station Feed, and you'll see live downlinks of the Earth from space from one of their webcams. But that's not all you'll see. Tonight, Monday the 6th, I was looking at the live link, and there was the Earth and space and part of the space station. We were just going into night. The International Space Station was over Africa, and I could see five orbs racing across the screen, and they seemed to be firing red lasers at each other. My son also witnessed the event. This must be what Ed Grimsley sees through his night vision goggles, but instead of looking up into the sky, we were looking down toward the Earth. All the best. Pretty interesting, huh? We put a link to that live feed from the space station. We put a link to that in K-Files E-Zine. I don't know. I think it was about a couple of weeks ago. I want to show you something. I told you we've got weird stuff happening over in the UK, and here is a picture for those of you who are watching on our TV channel. Ahmed Zagham photographed this unidentified object from his home in South Harrow, northwest London. He said, I was immersed in the TV program when just by chance I saw this uncanny light in the sky, and I was instantly mesmerized. He was able to take one shot while it was stationary for a few seconds, and he said then it moved rapidly up and above at incredible speed, a comparable speed to a fighter jet at full power, so fast that panning the camera in the direction was impossible. So that was over London. This came out today. This is new news. That came out today. I think it was about Friday, another picture came out. This is from Google Street View. And in Google Street View, if those of you who are looking at the video at our online TV station, you can see some little dots in the sky right next to the first lamp pole if you're looking from left to right. So the first light pole, just to the right of it, there are some little dots in the sky, and when you enlarge them, you can see very clearly that there are nine objects there. That also was over London, and Nick Pope commented on that. Nick Pope said, that this is very significant and very much worthy of being investigated fully by the Ministry of Defense. So it seems like there is a lot of stuff happening over the UK. Seems like it has become kind of a UFO hotbed. All right, folks, we have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking this evening with Robert Hastings, and we'll be talking about some pretty interesting stuff as well. So see you on the other side of the break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Robert Hastings. Robert Hastings has been with us before, and we've talked about the very fascinating information that he has been researching for years, and we'll talk about it some tonight, a little bit, but the information about UFOs showing up at military installations, nuclear bases, and so forth. And over the years, he's gotten some 115 or more witnesses to come forward, people who were there when it happened, and who have testified that, yes, indeed, it was real. It did happen. And so we'll talk with him a little bit about that. But we've got some new information. Well, not new to him, but it's new to us hearing it from him tonight, and I'm looking forward to that as well. Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Robert, you've been doing some research on these documents known as the MJ-12 documents. And for those who are joining us for the first time and maybe new to the whole subject, and the whole genre of UFO investigations, let me just briefly say that the MJ-12 documents are some documents that purport to be official documents from a group known as Majestic 12, or MJ-12, or Magic 12. And this is a group that is alleged to be in control, or to at least at some point in the past to have been in control of all the UFO information in the United States of America. Now, you've been doing some research on these documents. Why don't we just start with that, and you can bring us up to date on what's the deal with these. There's been a great deal of controversy about them. Some people say they're real, some people say they're not. So the ball is in your court.
Okay. For the last 35 years, excuse me, every time I talk, I'm getting an echo.
Well, I may be able to control it a little bit, but probably not much.
Okay, every time I say a word, I'm hearing the word in my ear.
I understand. I may not be able to control that.
Okay, well, let's proceed as best as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I have been researching nuclear weapons-related UFO cases since the early 1970s. These are cases where unidentified flying objects have hovered over nuclear missile sites, over nuclear bomb storage depots, nuclear weapons sites in general. And as you mentioned earlier, over the space of 35 years, I have gotten to go on the record well over 100 former or retired Air Force personnel who have described these events as being real, including the shutdown of nuclear missiles. Now, the reason I'm segueing into this topic is to tell you that there are legitimate declassified documents from the U.S. government that are now in the public domain that refer to these nuclear weapons-related cases. The first batch that I'm aware of were released by Dr. Bruce McAbee in the late 70s, talking about UFOs above nuclear weapons labs such as Los Alamos. Now, the reason I differentiate between these officially declassified documents, either routinely declassified or having been released via the Freedom of Information Act, is that the documents we're talking about now, the so-called MJ-12 documents, are not authentic. There is a great deal of evidence to suggest that they are forged. They were part of a disinformation scheme involving counterintelligence personnel at Kirtland Air Force Base in the 1980s. There was a big brouhaha in 1989 when a researcher named Bill Moore spoke at the MUFON International Symposium in Las Vegas and confessed that he had been recruited by an OSI agent named Richard Doty and had, in effect, assisted in the dissemination of disinformation, false information, to mislead a researcher named Linda Mouton Howe, and also to confuse and mislead a Albuquerque resident named Paul Benowitz. Paul Benowitz was photographing and filming UFOs as they were maneuvering above the Manzano nuclear weapons storage area, which was just south of his house. And he had a scientific background. He was getting very good photographs and films of these objects. When he told OSI about this and started telling other people about it in the media and in the research community, OSI launched this covert campaign against him to, in effect, befuddle his mind. They fed him all sorts of bogus information about underground alien bases and underground pitched battles between U.S. military personnel at these underground bases and all sorts of nonsensical stuff. This was pretty much admitted by Bill Moore in his confession speech in 1989. Now, what precipitated that confession on his part was the fact that I circulated a document 3 months earlier, which exposed all of this. I had done some research and found that this was, in fact, a disinformation operation involving forged documents and so on. And he effectively confessed to virtually almost everything I said in his speech in Las Vegas. I have recently, however, become aware that continuing over the last 10 years, the hoax has continued. There are some of the original players involved in it, Richard Doty, who's now retired from the Air Force. A retired captain named Robert Collins is involved in this hoax. And there are some very suspicious things that are continuing to go on. I would much prefer to continue investigating the nuclear weapons cases. Since my appearance on Larry King last July, I've had 10 or 15 new sources come forward to describe UFOs hovering over missile sites and nuclear sites. But I've just gotten fed up with what I'm seeing online, what I'm seeing being put on the web by these disinformation specialists. So last week, I posted an article at UFO Chronicles and sent you a copy, as you know, Kevin. Mm-hmm. And basically, I have been exposing, acquainting people who don't remember all of this back in the 1980s, updating those people who are coming new to the situation, but also providing additional information which conclusively demonstrates, in my mind, that this is a disinformation scheme. It is continuing. It is being. It involves, like I said, at least two of the players, two of the people, Doty and Collins, who were involved in the first go-around against Linda Mouton Howe and this Paul Benowitz. So I have posted this article called, well, I should tell you that their code names given to them by Bill Moore were Falcon for Doty and Condor for Bob Collins. So the name of my article is Operation Bird Droppings, and that basically is an allusion to all of this false and bogus pile that they've been dropping on people's heads all over the net. And I urge people to Google Operation Bird Droppings. It's now posted at UFO Chronicles website. And judge for yourself the depth of the investigation that I've done and other people have done, and compare that with the bogus claims of these two individuals and their cohorts.
Well, I look, you know my background. I'm an ex cop, and I when I read this article, I was very much impressed.
I can barely hear you, Kevin.
I was very, very much impressed with the article that you wrote. My background as a cop makes me like details. And you had a lot of details in the article. And one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting is one of these individuals holds himself out as someone who has passed the bar exam in New Mexico, and you have been able to discover that's not the case. And, you know, that's a pretty serious thing when you represent that you, it's the same, if I say to you that I am a, we'll say a Phoenix police officer, well, I'm representing myself as currently being a Phoenix police officer, and that's illegal because I'm not one. Now, I am a, I can say I am a cop, and we all understand that means that's what I did all my career. I'm now retired from that, but I'm not holding myself out as an active duty cop. If I say I'm a lawyer or I say I'm a judge, I'm holding myself up to the public and representing myself as someone who's passed the bar exam. And if you haven't and you say you did, that's pretty serious.
It is. And I should tell you, to pursue this particular topic, Richard Doty, the former OSI, Office of Special Investigations Sergeant at Kirtland Air Force Base, is the individual we're talking about. He was exposed by myself and others in the late 1980s as being a disinformation specialist. Again, Bill Moore confirmed a lot of that in his confession speech in Las Vegas in July of 1989. In any case, after leaving Kirtland Air Force Base OSI, Doty was transferred to Germany. And it's known, not the details, but the general outline is that he got himself into some sort of trouble with OSI, according to a man named Ernie Edwards, who at the time was a major and commander of the security police squadron at Kirtland. I have it on good authority that the trouble that Doty got himself into in Germany involved the handling of money. Now, I don't know the details on that, and again, we should say this is allegedly what happened, but in any case, he was booted out of OSI. He was stripped. He was decertified of his agent status. He was, when he came back to Kirtland Air Force Base, he was given a job in the food service at Kirtland Air Force Base. So he went from a counterintelligence agent to a food service worker. Now, all of that's true. I have his DD-214, his service record, to verify that he was, in fact, booted out of OSI and ended his career as in the food service. When he finally retired in the fall of 1988 from the Air Force, he applied with the New Mexico State Police and wrote a bunch of bogus letters claiming that he was still involved in secret intelligence operations. I tracked him down. I knew he was actually working in Grants, New Mexico as a state trooper, and so I caught him in that lie and brought it to his attention. He is the person now in his co-authored book with Bob Collins. Bob Collins and Richard Doty wrote a book in 1985 called Exempt from Disclosure, in which they repeat a lot of the same false, bogus, unsubstantiated claims, which in my opinion, it's either a hoax that they've created or it's a continuation of the disinformation that they were engaged in officially while in the Air Force. In any case, Doty, in this book, which was published in 2005, the latest version was published last year, makes the statement that he had, you know, gone to law school at University of New Mexico and passed the New Mexico bar exam. Those statements are totally, absolutely false. Now, a group of researchers called Reality Uncovered, they're basically UFO skeptics. However, they've done an excellent investigation of all of this, and I cite it. There's a link to it in my article. But basically, one of their members challenged Doty in a series of emails and basically caught Doty in yet another lie. They contacted Doty's superior with the New Mexico State Police, And, you know, what he basically was chastised and but did not, to my knowledge, publicly retract this claim. Bob Collins, in his latest version of the book, again, apparently makes the claim that Doty did go to law school and get his pass the bar exam. And as you said, if that is false, which it is, that is a very serious issue.
Well, it would be a very serious issue on its own, but it's compounded by the fact that he is, if what you're saying is true, and I have certainly no reason to doubt it, but assuming that it's true, he is a state trooper, a law enforcement officer. That means, with all of this baggage, if he's claiming in a book to be a lawyer, pass the bar exam, and it's not true, well, you see, that creates a whole lot of problems for him as a trooper. Who's going to believe his testimony in court on any case he is there to testify on? Absolutely nobody is going to buy his story. If I was a defense attorney representing someone against whom he was testifying, I would bring all that up. I would bring the book to court. I would get permission from His Honor to present that, because it demonstrates his level of credibility. And then once you blow him out of the water with that in court, he's finished. Not only in that case, but he's finished in every single case for the future.
Well, I understand. You're absolutely correct, and I understand your point entirely. I again urge people, your listeners, to find my article, reference all the links. The links go to the British Research Group, or the research group, rather, some of them are Britons, called Reality Uncovered. They did the work on this particular issue. They're the one that exposed this chicanery. But the point is, in a larger context, Richard Doty, another thing they uncovered is his participation in another hoax called Project Serpo. And about 3 years ago,
I'll tell you what, we have
this correspondence hit the web, supposedly from a retired government official.
Yeah, we have a break coming up and in just a few seconds. And I don't want to interrupt that story, so let's pick up with that on the other side of the break. And I also want us to get into some threats that he emailed to someone researching his background. They were included in your article, these emails were, and that's pretty serious stuff as well. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back. My guest this evening is Robert Hastings. And Robert, when we had to go away for break, you had just begun to tell us about Richard Doty's involvement in Project Serpo information. Let's back up to that and just start with that and go.
Well, again, one of the reasons that I felt compelled to go back online and write an article discussing what I had discovered 20 years ago, and again, more recently, other people, what they had found out about Doty and Collins. I just felt that, you know, I've been trying for 35 years to get the facts before the American public and the world regarding UFOs, what the government really knows, what's been going on behind the scenes. And when you have a couple of fools like this coming along and engaging in this disinformation, it's extremely annoying to me. They are trying to muddy the waters. They are confusing the issue. They're being invited on national radio programs, so they have an audience, and they can do their ill to a national and international audience. So I just thought it was time for me to, again, take up this particular battle. I have said publicly for years that based on what Bill Moore confessed to in 1989, that he was recruited by Richard Doty and OSI at Kirtland Air Force Base to spread disinformation to researchers, to spy on people. There was a research group called APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. He acknowledged that he spied on the founders of the this research organization for OSI. He was doing the government's bidding in terms of spying on American citizens who had an interest in UFOs. He served a similar role in his surveillance of this poor Paul Benowitz, who had photographed UFOs above the Manzano weapons storage area. None of that would have come to light had I not pressed the issue by publishing my paper in March of 1989. There is a link to that in my most recent article. Again, I call it Operation Bird Droppings to make quite clear what I feel about the disinformation, the crap that Richard Doty and Bob Collins are disseminating around the world. Someone needs to take a stand. There are credible researchers, the late Bob Todd, Barry Greenwood, other people who've investigated the MJ-12 hoax. There is forensic evidence that would stand up in a court of law to prove that the documents are forged. There were another release, another cache of documents about 10 years ago, supposedly more MJ-12 papers released by a man named Tim Cooper. Those are very suspicious. We're trying to get to the bottom of that. Just this day, the last 2 days, I've exchanged emails with Tim Cooper. He has failed a lie detector test regarding his knowledge of getting those documents, where they came from, how he arrived, how they arrived at his door. Barry Greenwood makes some very interesting observations about the fact that what he's describing just does not hold up as far as a scenario. So there are open questions about Tim Cooper's role in all of this. I asked him if he would be willing to take another polygraph test and whether he would be willing to swear out an affidavit denying that he had any involvement in forging or otherwise perpetrating a hoax. And he just told me that he would not do that, that he said everything he had to say about it. Now, I have no idea, one way or the other, whether he has engaged in chicanery or if he's an unwitting dupe, but there are just a lot of unanswered questions. But all of this just muddies the water. There are legitimate data. There are evidence that the Roswell UFO was indeed a crashed extraterrestrial craft. We can go into that in detail if you want to later in the program, but I'm not saying that the Roswell incident didn't happen, but these forged documents, these supposedly MJ-12 documents that talk about the secret Roswell recovery operations, are bogus. They are proved forgeries. All of the people that I hear online talking about how amazing they are and how they really get to the bottom of the secret are being kicked in the butt, and they don't know it. They're being duped. They're being led around by disinformation agents, including Richard Doty, Bob Collins, in some cases Bill Moore back in the 80s, and other people. And I just think this needs to be brought to a head. I have publicly called Robert Doty and Richard Doty and Robert Collins frauds. They are engaged either in a hoax or disinformation. The information that they're presenting publicly are lies. If they feel that I have libeled them or slandered them, they have the opportunity to sue me. In a court of law, everything they say and everything I say and all of the other people involved in this will be under oath, under penalty of perjury. And the people who have been perpetrating all of these lies, which can be demonstrated as such if a court case comes to pass, they will be in severe trouble. I mean, we've already mentioned Doty's problems that he's created for himself. That would be nothing compared to committing perjury in a court of law if they were to repeat all of their claims that they have online.
Well, that covers a question that I was going to ask, and that is, what happens now? I mean, here you are on this show, people in 95 countries listening, and they're hearing you say all this about Richard Doty and Robert Collins. What happens if they decide, you know, well, it is not we who are providing disinformation, it's that guy, it's Hastings, and then they start putting out all that information. So then it's he said, she said, and where do we go from there?
that's exactly what they've done for 20 years. That's what they're going to do now that I'm back after them. But again, you know, I ask people to look at the articles that I publish, the evidence that I cite, the research that's been done by this group, Reality Uncovered. All of the links are there. All of the supporting documentation is there. It's quite clear, unless you're just, you know, a blind believer in MJ-12 and think it's the cat's meow and really the bottom, you know, the inside secret. Anyone who is going to objectively, rationally look at what I'm saying, what Barry Greenwood's saying about the fraudulent nature of these documents, and compare it with the exposed lies and, you know, falsehoods, disinformation that has come from the other camp, Doty and Collins, and back in the 80s, Bill Moore, I'm confident that most people are going to draw the right conclusions. Again, you're right, until this gets into a legal venue, which I have openly taunted these people to, you know, if they believe that I'm slandering them or, you know, libeling them in print, then they have the opportunity to sue me, and that is perfectly fine with me, because that is the only way we are going to get people under oath who have to tell the truth in the court of law. And they know they're lying. They know they're engaging in disinformation. The first question I would want to ask in a court of law of Richard Doty under oath is, are you a lawyer, sir? And let's see what he says under oath. That would be the first evidence of the chicanery that comes from the other side. So, you know, let's rumble.
Well, you're a brave man, because lots of folks would shy away from any possible court battle. I myself have lived in court as a cop for all those years. I've been in court day after day after day after day. And it does not hold the fear and mystique for me that I think it would hold for a lot of people. But and I have the same attitude that you have about anything that I say or do, and that is, hey, you know, if I've libeled someone, if I've slandered someone, or if you threaten me with a lawsuit, well, you know, you don't have to have an appointment to find me. Come on with it.
That's
and,
right.
You know, but in the course of all of this, the other group, I think it was called Reality Uncovered.
Yes.
One of their researchers received some email from Mr. Doty that you have published, and this email, in the email, it purports to be Doty telling her that he's going to release information about some very negative information about her. I think it's pretty interesting and instructive. Could you just tell us what that exchange was all about and how it resolved?
Well, I would have to say that, you know, I think, and I'm doing this from memory, obviously, this is not my own research. These are published information that appear on the Reality Uncovered website. But one of the people who was affiliated with them in 2005, named Shauna Connolly, challenged Doty. You know, you say in your book, exempt from disclosure in the 2005 edition, that you have finished law school and have passed the bar exam in New Mexico. Can you provide evidence of that? Well, the exchange, which I printed with Reality Uncovered's permission, appears in my article, Operation Bird Droppings, in which he basically says, you know, I have discovered things about you that I'm going to print. You've been involved with, I forget what it was, a couple of crimes, felonies. And she immediately was not intimidated and said, you know, that is totally false. If you print that, I will sue you, and I would enjoy suing a New Mexico State policeman. And in response, Doty said, well, you know, you've been spreading false things about me, which he never identified to her, so I'm going to start spreading false things about you. Now, is that something a cop should be saying? And at some point, you know, it almost comes down to like a blackmail situation. That's the way Connolly took it. That's the way researchers at Reality Uncovered took it. They have subtitled part of this exchange Rick Doty's Blackmail. And basically, at one point, he says in an email, I won't talk about you online if you don't talk about me. Now, I have the original emails from Shauna Connolly, and we could present those in a court of law to verify that I don't know if he's retired now, but I believe in 2005, I mean, I know for a fact he was an active New Mexico State policeman, in effect, was engaging in very questionable statements to this person online, and all the evidence exists. Now, that group ended up contacting his superior and at the New Mexico State Police, and that person more or less chastised Doty, as I said, and he never contacted Shauna Connolly again. And she wrote back, she wasn't going to let this go. I mean, she was being threatened with him smearing her reputation online and so on and so forth. So she said, you know, what do you think? She asked his superior, what do you think about a state policeman claiming to be an attorney when he's not? And the response she got was, well, we're checking into that, but she never got any more information. Again, this is all in the co-authored book by Bob Collins and Richard Doty. All of this came to light in 2006. All of the emails are from 2006, about a year after the book was published, and yet Collins has republished a new edition in 2008, which makes essentially the same false statement that Doty is an attorney. They're not recanting, they're not retracting these false statements. There's no reference in anything that Bob Collins has said publicly that acknowledges that Doty made false claims about being an attorney and all of this. This is the caliber of people that are pushing this MJ-12 material and are pushing this SERPO, Project SERPO material. When you look into their sordid, the underbelly of what's going on behind the scenes, if they're not engaged in a private hoax for whatever reason, they are continuing in an ongoing disinformation scheme.
All right, Robert, we have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll pick up right there. And folks, I told you it was going to be an exciting week, didn't I? We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest. When we had to go away, Robert, you were talking about this investigation, and the state trooper supervisor said, "Yeah, we're looking into that too," and about him being claiming to be a lawyer, and then nothing more was ever heard. So let's pick up there and move forward. What's transpired since then?
Well, I can't tell you. I've been in touch with the webmaster and some of the leading researchers associated with Reality Uncovered website. And we've discussed a variety of subjects, the most recent claims that Collins has made. There's some updates that I published, this Operation Bird Droppings article. I published one update. There will be another update coming soon, shedding more light on all of the behind-the-scenes chicanery. And I intend to address some of the more recent things that Bob Collins has been up to behind the scenes. In any case, as far as I know, as far as Shauna Connolly, and I've emailed with her, I've exchanged email with her, that was the last they heard about it, and the supervisor wasn't prepared to discuss the issue any further. But she did say that after she contacted Doty's superior, he never wrote to her again. And, they felt, and it's clear if you read it, that they had pretty much exposed him for a liar. They contacted the University of New Mexico Law School and found that he never attended classes there. He never graduated. He certainly didn't take the bar exam. So all of the evidence that could be presented in court to demonstrate that Richard Doty is continuing to make false statements, not only about himself, but the fact that he's been involved in this Project Serpo hoax, the MJ-12 papers hoax. He forged a document in the late 70s involving a supposed incident at a nuclear missile site up at Ellsworth Air Force Base, Montana, that was one of the first things that was exposed. Even Bill Moore admitted that he had engaged in the forgery of this document. Supposedly an alien, a UFO landed near a nuclear missile site, and an alien got out and was being chased around and shot at with a gun by one of the guards. It's total hogwash, classic Doty hogwash, disinformation, and it's, again, especially irritating to me because I've spent 35 years investigating the legitimate cases where UFOs have hovered over nuclear missile sites and missiles have malfunctioned. I have over 100 former and retired Air Force witnesses. Two of them appeared on Larry King with me last July, describing these kinds of incidents. So when somebody like Doty comes along and engages in disinformation, either officially under orders as an Air Force OSI agent, or nowadays he's either working behind the scenes with the Air Force still, or he's just up to no good on his own behalf. And I'm just very, very irritated by the fact that so many witnesses now want to come forward, genuine witnesses, and talk about what they were involved in behind the scenes at missile sites. And you've got a character like Doty and Bob Collins, who posted another bogus UFO missile case document on his website, which my sources say is a totally bogus document, another forgery. You know, they're doing the same thing they were doing in the 1970s, these two guys, and they need to be called out.
All right, I've got two important questions for you, and the first one is let me adjust some knobs here. Okay, the first question is this.
I can barely hear you.
Have you been threatened by either one of these guys since you've taken them on for this latest round?
Doty, going back to my first paper in the 1980s, Bill Moore actually showed up at my door unannounced, obviously trying to intimidate me. And, he basically, he didn't have the chance to do it, and 3 months later he confessed to about three-quarters of what I'd written in my papers. So more recently with this latest activity, I mean, my new article, Operation Bird Droppings, has only been out for a week, but Doty hasn't said boo. I'd be very interested to hear from him. I've caught him in lie after lie after lie. If he ever shows up on my door, then this is definitely going into court. In any case, Bob Collins continues to weave all of these lies in his email responses to me. He has a collection of people who actually believe what he says, unfortunately. And I've heard from some of them saying that I'm totally off base, I don't have any facts, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing that Collins has said to me for the last week. But again, I have documented all of the things in my article that he has been up to. He can't document anything that he has said to me, as far as I can tell, in an email. There's been a number of them. And again, this is going to go back to, like you said, it's going to remain in the category of he said, she said, unless someone is willing to take this to the head and put, to a head and put it in a court of law. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I think it should. And I am prepared to appear under oath in a court of law and talk about what I know about. Barry Greenwood, who found that the MJ-12 documents were clear forgeries, presented all this forensic evidence about 20 years ago. All these people could be presented in a court of law under oath. And again, the opposition under oath, in a court of law, if you have Richard Doty on the witness stand, the first thing you want to ask him, I would think, is, are you a lawyer or not? And if not, why are you claiming this in the book you published? And that right away would undercut his credibility entirely. And the fact that Bob Collins has known about this for at least 3 years, or for at least since 2006, when the reality researchers brought it to his attention, he's not denied it. He's sticking up for Doty in some emails that he wrote to Reality Uncovered, which again are at their website. He's saying that they got it all wrong, and Doty's an honorable person, et cetera, et cetera. He has nothing to do with the Serpo hoax, even though the Reality Uncovered researchers have the forensic evidence to prove that Doty is involved in the Serpo hoax. So guys are defending each other. They're covering each other's backs, and they're publishing the same crap that they published 20 years ago. And the more people that know about this and know, you know, not to step in the piles that they're dropping all over the place, the better.
Well, then the second question is, why? I mean, what? Neither one of these guys, as far as we know, is attached to OSI at the moment. As far as we know, they, at least what they say, is they are no longer part of all of that government operation. All right, so then why? Why would they do this? Why would they put this stuff out there if they knew it wasn't true?
What I say in my article is, if they are not still working covertly for the U.S. Air Force or some other agency in the government to spread dissemination, then they are engaging in a hoax. It's not disinformation, it's a hoax. It's one of the two, and they are perpetrating bogus information on the Internet. It is muddying the waters. It is confusing the issue. I say in my article, you know, there are differences of opinion about UFOs, what the data add up to, and so on. But that's legitimate data that you can interpret one way or the other. What these guys are putting out is fraudulent information, pure and simple. It's either disinformation because they're still working with the government, or it's a hoax that they've engaged in. One way or the other, it has to be exposed. People have to stand up to them and present the credible data that demonstrates that the MJ-12 documents are forgeries and that Project Serpo is a hoax.
Okay, we've only got about a minute here until it's time for our top of the hour break. Let's talk about how you know Project Serpo information is a hoax.
Again, I'm going to refer you to the Reality Uncovered website. If you go to the link that I provided in my article, Operation Bird Droppings, there is a wealth of information as to how they uncovered the fact that Richard Doty was the synonymous person who submitted the first Serpo information online, and it was disseminated by a person named Victor Martinez. I suspect poor Victor's been duped, but in any case, that evidence that they uncovered, again, it's forensic. It involved tracking down the IPs, the information relating to the email addresses, and it all goes back to Richard Doty. And I will let them explain it. They've done the research. They've laid it all out, and they've documented everything they put online.
All right, but obviously they have documented it well enough that it satisfies you in terms of determining that, as far as you're concerned, Serpo is a hoax.
Is a hoax, absolutely. One of the things they mentioned is one of the people that supposedly was supporting the reality of the Project Serpo scenario, a guy named Paul McGovern. Well, they've tracked the same email address back to Richard Doty. So he's playing games. He's presenting himself as another person that he's not. I mean, none of this surprises me. I know what this guy's been up to for the last 20 years. But they've got all the evidence, you know, rather than me trying to summarize something that I have only recently become acquainted with, I would ask your listeners to go to the Reality Uncovered website and, you know, search for their expose on Project Serpo.
All right. We have a break taking over, so we'll pick up there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest, Robert Hastings. And on the other side of this break, shortly after the break, I'll open up the telephone lines for you. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Hastings, and man, have we been hearing some hot information. I want to explore just a little bit more before I open up the telephone lines And rest assured, I will open up the telephone lines. Robert, you said that there is information, that there is evidence that the Roswell crash indeed was an extraterrestrial craft. You said that a lot of the information that people rely on, they're getting from the MJ-12 documents, and that's bogus, but there is real information, real evidence. Let's talk about that. What is that real evidence?
Well, it's circumstantial evidence. There is, on the one hand, empirical evidence, which you can hold in your hand and test in a laboratory. As far as I'm aware, there is no legitimate empirical evidence to prove that a UFO crashed at Roswell in 1947. On the other hand, in 1990, Dr. Kevin Randall, a leading Roswell researcher, interviewed, I believe twice or three times, a retired Air Force Brigadier General Arthur E. Exon. General Exon told Kevin Randall point blank that the object from Roswell was, quote, a craft from space. He also said that it was a, quote, spacecraft. Those are two words that he's used in his interviews with Randall. He has further said that he was at Wright Field, later Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, in 1947 when the news came in, rumors came in about this crash. He goes on to say that there were information floating around the base that this, in fact, was highly strange debris that had been shipped to Wright Field. Some, he said, a small number of people thought it might be Soviet, but the majority of people thought it was extraterrestrial. Again, this is a retired brigadier general in the Air Force talking on the record. He was, in fact, actually in the 1960s, the base commander of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for about 2 years, I believe. In any case, Kevin Randall would be the better guest to discuss that particular topic. However, in 1998, I interviewed a man here in Albuquerque named Chester Lytle, who worked for the Atomic Energy Commission back in the early 1950s. He had made cryptic remarks to me around 1990 or 91 about having information about UFOs around nuclear sites, including the Nevada test site where we were setting off bombs, firing weapons, as he called it, exploding atomic weapons in the early 50s. And he made cryptic remarks to me in the early 90s about the fact that he was aware of UFO activity during these tests. I pestered him for the better part of a decade, I think 9 years, before he finally would agree to an interview, at which point he told me about all of this activity going on at the Nevada test site involving UFOs. But more interestingly, for the purposes of this discussion, he told me that in 1953, he was in Alaska doing work for the Atomic Energy Commission, and one of his personal friends was William Blanchard, who was the base commander of Roswell Army Airfield when this Roswell crash occurred. And he said that General Blanchard, they were talking about UFOs on this long flight from Alaska to Illinois. There had been sightings up in Alaska near Eielson Air Force Base, which was a forward atomic bomber base. And out of the blue, according to Chet Lytle, that I have him on tape, he said General Blanchard admitted that the object that had been recovered in Roswell was an extraterrestrial craft and that bodies had been retrieved from it of alien beings. And I was startled to hear this, and I asked him to repeat it, and he did. And he went on to say that in conjunction with his work with the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, he later had an office at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that his secretary was the wife of one of the Air Force personnel who was involved in some capacity with the analysis of the craft and the bodies that was going on at Wright-Patterson. And he said that I was hearing credible stories from these people about the tests on the alien bodies and so on. And at one point in the interview, he said, I was highly cleared, top secret, for weapons stockpiling, but I was never allowed into that area. I only had to rely on the stories I was hearing from my secretary and her husband. So this guy worked for the not only the Atomic Energy Commission, he worked for the CIA on contract work. He was involved with the Manhattan Project that invented the first atomic bomb. You know, the guy has bona fides, and he knows what he's talking about, and he made all of these admissions to me in 1998. Now, in 2001, I wanted to follow up with him. He was very reluctant to, you know, meet with me further, but finally in 2001, he allowed me back to his office for a follow-up interview. And I tried to clip a microphone on his tie, which I did before, and he said, "We can't tape this." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "After you and I talked, I was paid a visit," and he wouldn't tell me by who or what agency, but he was paid a visit and basically told me not to talk to me or Don Schmidt, who apparently had been talking to him. Don Schmidt was Kevin Randall's Roswell research partner for a while. In any case, the last thing he told me was, he said, "You know, I would like to help you, but I have contracts with the government here with my engineering company in Albuquerque, and I just do not want to jeopardize those. I've worked all my life to build this company up, and I'm just going to not say anything more than I've already said." Now, again, that's circumstantial evidence, but when you consider the source, this gentleman's credentials, what he did for the government, and the fact that General Exxon is also on the record, consider his background, then I think you've got two highly credible sources to suggest that indeed an ET craft did crash in New Mexico in 1947.
All right, tell you what we need to do. Let's open up the telephone lines and allow folks who are listening around the world to call in and ask questions or make comments. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number, if you can call, if you're on a calling plan where you can call this and it's not doesn't cost you long distance to call it, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. If you would have to pay long distance fees, use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. 888-223-4599. Now, if you're located outside of the United States or outside of Canada, those telephone numbers will work, but neither will be toll-free for you. You can instead use our flash message feature, and the flash message feature is on my website, all right? So what you do is you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, and under the photograph of Robert Hastings, you'll see a link that says Flash Message. Just click on that, and you'll be able to send your comment or your question. It will. We call it a flash message because after you send it, a little notice starts flashing on my monitor over here on the right, and I'll read it, and we'll ask Robert to respond to it. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
Hello, Mr. Hastings.
Hello.
Hello, okay, you can hear me loud and clear. What do you think, I know that Project Serpo, there's most of it is disinformation, but do you think that there is a possibility that a similar program did occur, but to try and cover it up, that they did release a whole bunch of disinformation out there to cover up perhaps a similar project that did occur?
Given the available evidence, I think that's not a very likely scenario. You know, I have been on the college lecture circuit now for 27 years. I've spoken out at over 500 colleges and universities. And I hear lots of theories from people about this, that, or the other. What I would simply say is, with all due respect, there are people who research this. I've researched this topic for 35 years. And when you have, on the one hand, someone like Richard Doty, who has been linked to Serpo, making claims that he's an attorney when he's not, that, to me, says, if you want to believe anything he has to say, that's your problem. This whole idea that they're releasing some legitimate information with a whole bunch of good information, I just don't buy that scenario. I think what is going on is the fact that researchers such as myself and other people are making headway in finding witnesses to come forward talking about the UFO cover-up. And so to try to counteract these things, the disinformation specialists at the Pentagon or OSI or CIA are coming up with all this crap to confuse the issue, to raise doubts about the legitimacy of any documents that come forth, the testimony of any witnesses, because the average person on the street has to weigh it against all of these exposed frauds, which in fact Doty and Collins are. I already exposed them as disinformation agents back in the 80s. Now, you know, I'm not thrilled about going to court. I'm not thrilled about the money it would cost to put this into a legal venue. But I just feel strongly enough about the facts that have been gathered, the evidence that's been generated against these guys. I don't know if they're disinformation agents nowadays or liars, but they definitely are spreading BS, and they need to be called out. So, you know, there are very few people, it's been my experience over the years, that are willing to stand up, stand their ground, and go to court to stand up to these liars and the people that have been leaned on by the government. Well, I'm one of those people, for better or worse, and, you know, that's where it's going to need to go before this gets proven.
All right, and one more quick question. Who has been here, according to your research? What species have been here, and what is disinformation? And with that, I'll take your answer off the air.
I'm very conservative in the way I present my opinion about what is going on behind the UFO phenomenon. It's clear if you look at the declassified documents and if you look at the legitimate testimony of the bona fide ex-military people, not these bogus witnesses that Doty and Collins are presenting, but people who can present military records to prove that they were at missile sites or bomber bases or what have you. The witnesses that the testimony that these witnesses are presenting indicates that disc-shaped craft or cylinder-shaped craft or spherical-shaped craft of vastly superior capabilities have been monitoring our nuclear weapons system since the 1940s and occasionally interfering with their functionality. That can be said. If you look at the radar data that's been presented, and in my book, UFOs and Nukes, I have a whole chapter devoted to interviews I've done with FAA radar personnel who were at Malmstrom Air Force Base, one of the missile bases where this was going on, talking about objects traveling at 2,000 miles per hour and then stopping on a dime, zigzagging hundreds of miles, hovering over missile sites and so on. To me, that is a technology beyond human origin. We simply do not have, the Russians do not have, no country on earth has technology in the 40s or even today that can do all of that. And it's going on according to the witnesses. So, therefore, I have concluded that we are dealing with one or more races of alien beings who have been monitoring us. You know, who knows? Maybe for 1,000 years, maybe for the last 50 years, who knows? If you look at the legitimate sighting cases of landed UFOs where you have beings walking around the UFOs, those have been reported by military personnel, by police, by credible witnesses. There was something called the humanoid wave in France in the fall of 1954. Google that and look at that. And you see that there are a number of cases, and there have been all over the world since then, of beings. Some of them are 3 feet tall, some are 7 feet tall, some have white skin, some have pink skin, you know, very, very wide, more differing morphologies. Facial features differ. So to me, that suggests we're dealing with not only one race, but multiple races of aliens who are here. Some could just be passing through, some could be, you know, monitoring us on an ongoing basis. But that's my assessment of the situation.
All right, back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hello, this is Richard Lenny from the United Kingdom.
Yes, Richard.
Hello, Robert. Yes.
Hello.
Hello, Robert. Yes. These missile bases, you say they're having problems, is that right, with technology when these UFOs fly over? They interfere with them and they seem to lose power and everything. I've heard that somewhere. Is that right? Is that right at all?
First, let me say that my website is ufohastings.com. And on that website, I have an articles page. One of the articles deals with UFO sightings at ICBM sites and nuclear weapons storage areas. That's 24 pages of testimony from my ex-Air Force witnesses describing these incidents. Now, what seems to have occurred again, we're talking about at the missile sites in particular, going back to the early 1960s at Walker Air Force Base, F.E. Warren Air Force Base, to name two, Altus Air Force Base in Oklahoma, where according to the declassified documents and or the testimony of the witnesses I've interviewed, these are retired missile launch officers, missile maintenance personnel, missile targeting officers. What they're describing are incidents where suddenly, out of the blue, so to speak, a disc-shaped craft comes in at high speed and hovers over either a launch facility, which is a missile silo, or a launch control facility, which in the Minuteman system would launch 10 missiles. And the guards, you know, at the ground level are horrified, they're terrified, they're describing this silent object, usually very bright, luminous object hovering directly over these sites. They radio to the missile launch personnel down in the launch capsule 60 feet underground. And in some cases, and again, I have a 600-page book, UFOs and Nukes, where I'm describing in detail and presenting the verbatim word-for-word testimony from my sources describing many cases when the objects flew around the missile sites, nothing happened to the missiles, but then on other occasions, missiles malfunction. Entire flights of 10 missiles went down, malfunctioned precisely at a time when the security guards were reporting a UFO either over a missile silo or over the launch control facilities. And even more dramatic than that, I've interviewed a man named David Schur, who was at Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota in the mid-1960s, who told me that while he was underground in one of these launch capsules, his guards reported a UFO moving from missile to missile to missile in his flight, his group of 10 missiles. And David Shore has told me on the record that each time the guard said it was over missile X, Y, or Z, down in the launch capsule on the missile readiness display panel, that missile that the UFO was hovering over suddenly activated and was for a number of seconds preparing to launch. And they actually had to press the inhibit switch to prevent that from happening. Now, there is another incident. If you go online and search Google for the Ukraine 1982 UFO incident at a Soviet Ukraine missile base, there is now on the record testimony by two retired Soviet Army officers about a UFO hovering over a base in October of 82, a missile base. And again, virtually the same thing David Schur told me, for 15 seconds, suddenly the missiles were activated precisely at the time that the UFO was above them in the vicinity. And for 15 seconds, these missiles were preparing to launch. ABC TV, an American television network, actually published, presented all this on television in 1994. And the transcript, the testimony, word-for-word testimony of these Russian Army officers, is now online, and you can read it if you search Google for that topic.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. All right. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580 or toll-free 1-888-223-4599. As I said, if you're outside of the United States or if you're outside of Canada, in other words, you're not in Canada, you're not in the United States, and you determine that you have a question or a comment, but you don't want to pay those long-distance fees, international long-distance fees, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by going to my website. Click on the link that says flash message, type in your question or your comment, and I will get it, okay? That is the only way to get a flash message to me. There is no other way. That way, it will get to me almost immediately. 602-539-9580 or 888-223-4599 is the toll-free number. So, the same thing was happening in the Soviet Union with relative to these UFOs and nuclear missile sites. The same thing was happening in the Soviet Union as was happening here. what do you suspect the deal is? Why are they trying? Why are they activating missiles and getting them into their launch sequence?
Well, first, let me follow up on my comments to the caller and say that I have published in its entirety David Shore's comments to me, his testimony. It's online. If you Google Launch in Progress, which is the name of the article, and my name, you'll see the entire two-page testimony of David Shore. I tried to get him to go on Larry King with me last July, and he felt a little reluctant to do it. But he definitely knows what he's talking about, and the people who appeared on Larry King with me corroborated the types of incidents that he was describing. In answer to your question, I think that, and three-quarters, roughly 75% or so of the people that I've interviewed, believe that whoever these beings are sending a signal to not only Washington but Moscow, certainly during the Cold War era and possibly even today. I'm aware of UFO activity up in Montana near missile sites as late as December of 2006, so it's not decades old by any means. But I'm of the opinion, and this is certainly, you know, in speculation on my part, but it's informed speculation because I've done the research, and three-quarters of these people agree with me that these beings, in effect, are trying to tell the nuclear powers that we are playing with fire, that, you know, if there is a nuclear launch, as was threatened during the Cold War, where thousands of weapons would be fired simultaneously, that's basically the end of human civilization. Anyone who knows about the effects of nuclear weapons, you know, aside from the hundreds of millions of people who would die in the initial exchange, there would be radiation poisoning, which would create massive cancers in world populations. You would have so much debris and smoke and soot thrown up in the atmosphere that the experts say that it would create a nuclear winter, it's called, that could last from several months up to 2 years, where the entire planet, basically, because of the global weather systems, this soot and debris would be thrown all around the globe, blocking out sunlight, if not entirely, virtually entirely, and that would render widespread, large-scale, agriculture impossible for that period. So in addition to all of these initial deaths, you're going to have mass starvation all over the globe if a nuclear war ever occurs. In my view, whoever these beings are, they obviously haven't landed on the White House lawn and revealed themselves, but they do seem to be, at least since the late 40s, engaged in this activity where they're monitoring our weapons of mass destruction.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back more with Robert Hastings and with your telephone calls right after this. Back. My guest this evening is Robert Hastings. Robert, when we went away, I had asked the question, and you had answered that these beings, whoever they are, seem to be trying to send a message. What is the message? Hey, we can launch your missiles, and there's nothing you can do to stop us?
In my opinion, the basic message is you're playing with fire. You need to eliminate nuclear weapons. I think that's probably the core message. Now, when there are these descriptions of missiles being temporarily activated, in my opinion, I don't think the missiles would have actually launched. In fact, I asked David Shore, this missile launch officer up at Minot Air Force Base, I said, you know, clarify this for me. And again, this is in my article, Launch in Progress, which is online. And I said, you know, are you saying that these missiles potentially would have been launched? And he said we were getting numerous, what he called spurious indicators, anomalous readings on a number of systems involved with the missiles. So he said, I don't actually know if these missiles would have launched if we had not pressed the inhibit switch. But in any case, there is something called an inhibit switch, so if you do, or button, so if you have an impending launch, an unauthorized launch, the launch crews down in the capsule can actually countermand that, counteract that by pressing this inhibit button. And he said when we did that, all of the signals, all the indicators to return to normal. Now, interestingly, he said when we returned to the base the next day, him and his commander, missile commander, it's a two-man team, they went to the base operations officer with their log. They were about to, you know, they thought they'd be debriefed about this very, very dramatic incident. And the operation officer told them, nothing happened, nothing to discuss, go home. And, you know, he told me that there were other missile teams that got into the base earlier. They probably were debriefed, and by the time these two arrived, their commanders already knew what the deal was and didn't need to talk to anyone else. But David knew about my work back in 2001, and it took him until 2007 to get up the courage to talk to me and go on the record. And he's just concerned about repercussions, I think, and that's why he didn't go on Larry King with me. Now, Kevin, you and I, after I appeared on your show several months ago, after the program, we were discussing whether these disruptions of our nuclear missiles is a good thing or a bad thing, and I think you and I had somewhat different opinions. You know, I think obviously the Pentagon and the guys in the Kremlin are quite upset by their strategic weapons being incapacitated, at least temporarily. But in my opinion, just speaking as an American citizen and a human being, I think that if there is an outside influence that's trying to, you know, urge or prod the nuclear powers into disarming, I think that's nothing but good, in my view. You know, the Pentagon is never going to admit this is going on, neither is the Kremlin. It's hard enough to get these witnesses to come forward even decades later. But sooner or later, the secret will come out. And recently, as many of your listeners may know, President Obama has called for the elimination of nuclear weapons within, you know, a very short period of time. And I applaud that entirely, and I think any sane human being would, if we can arrange it so that, you know, the nuclear powers disarm and no one has these. Now, the skeptics say, or the people on the other side of the issue say, well, terrorists will always have them. Well, maybe that's true, and maybe in human history there will be incidents of terrorist groups setting off a single nuke here or there. But that, you know, as horrible as that would be, certainly is pales into comparison when you look at what would happen during a full-scale nuclear exchange between, say, the U.S. and Russia. I mean, it's only sane that we would want to try to get rid of these weapons.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I was wondering if your guest or you remember sometime back, it's on YouTube or somewhere, they were launching a missile from California, and they hired this crew to with a fast camera to film this rocket launch all the way through. And after reviewing this, they found that a UFO circled this rocket and shot lasers into the warhead, which was supposed to be just a dummy warhead. I was wondering if your guest thinks that if we were to push the button, do you believe that these people were aliens would step in and shut it down or destroy them? Or
well,
okay, let's let him answer, Terry.
Let me respond by saying that I am the person who has most investigated that case. It's called the Big Sur case. At my website, UFOHastings.com, on the articles page, I have an article. Again, it's about 20 pages in length, called The Big Sur UFO Incident. It answers your questions, but basically, I have been in touch with now Dr. Robert Jacobs. He appeared with me on Larry King Live last July. He was the photo instrumentation officer in charge of that telescope, camera telescope system that photographed the incident that you've described. It did happen. I have correspondence between himself and another Air Force officer named Florence Mansman, private correspondence going back to the early 1980s, basically before this story broke, where they're talking to each other in private and saying, holy cow, do you know, I can't believe that happened. But but they're describing in detail what was going on. Major Mansman, who was actually the photo interpretation officer at Vandenberg Air Force Base, says in his letters, and I've described all of this in my articles, in the article rather, and I'm going to post those letters on my website within the next 30 days. Major Mansman was telling Lieutenant Jacobs, or then later Bob Jacobs in the 1980s, that he examined this film frame by frame as the instrumentation, or the photo interpretation officer rather, and he said what was clearly seen from frame to frame was a disc-shaped object with a central dome. He said that before each flash of light, which you call it a laser, it probably was not a laser, but some sort of plasma weapon. Plasmas can be seen in space. Lasers would not be. In any case, Major Mansman, later Dr. Florence Mansman said that you could see from frame to frame that before each bolt of light emerged from the disc, it pivoted on its central axis. And he said that he was in aerial combat in World War II. And his interpretation was that, you know, the object, what he called a platform, had to be in a certain position to fire this weapon. But he absolutely has corroborated everything that Dr. Jacobs said. If you go to YouTube, you can see this Larry King episode from July 18th, 2008. It was later rebroadcast this past New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2008. And you'll see Lieutenant Jacobs, now Dr. Jacobs, just trashing the skeptic Bill Nye, because Bill Nye was coming up with all these lame excuses to explain away what Jacobs knew had happened. So Dr. Jacobs just read Bill Nye the Riot Act on this program, and again, it's on YouTube. So it occurred, and there are other incidents, as I describe in my article. The New York Times in 1974 published a very lengthy story, which I reprinted in my book, UFOs and Nukes, describing a virtually identical incident in August of 1973, again at Vandenberg, when a dummy warhead was being fired over the Pacific Ocean. And according to these sources quoted in the New York Times, one UFO came up and maneuvered near the dummy warhead, and three others were seen nearby, and they were tracked on radar and apparently seen visually. So what's been described by Bob Jacobs and Florence Mansman was not unique by any means.
Outstanding. Let me just say that I received a flash message here from the United Kingdom from Richard, and he was asking about the exact same thing that Terry asked us about, and that you've just answered. So, Richard, I got your flash message, and Robert Hastings has answered your question. So it seems like that's pretty much on a lot of people's minds, a pretty dramatic incident. And whatever became of the film?
It was confiscated by the CIA. Both Mansman and Jacobs said that there were two agents in the office. They looked at the film together. The film was confiscated by the CIA, and presumably it's still within the agency and has been analyzed. To finish a thought in terms of what Terry was asking me, I sort of got off on a tangent, but in any case, you know, what I say in my book, UFOs and Nukes, is we have no guarantee that this demonstration, which is what I think it was, whoever was in that UFO were demonstrating they could shoot down a nuclear warhead in flight, traveling, you know, 14, 15,000 miles per hour. They did it once. The question is, if thousands and thousands are being launched by the U.S. and the Soviet Union during the Cold War simultaneously, the question is whether or not they could perform that same feat on a massive scale. So, you know, as I say in my book, we have no guarantees that, you know, even though they've apparently, whoever they are, have spent six decades demonstrating their abilities to interfere with nuclear weapons and their monitoring of nuclear weapons, we have no guarantee that if it ever it comes to a nuclear war, you know, that they're going to intervene. They could just go, well, you know, we tried to warn you, and, you know, just kind of pull back and watch the whole thing unfold. So I don't think we have any guarantee that what has occurred so far is any indicator of what would occur in the future.
Yeah, I think all of us need that little bit of a reality check as we think about all of this, and the reality check being that there are consequences for our actions, and we are responsible for our actions. And, you know, I guess if we humans decide we're going to blow this planet apart, nobody's going to stop it, and you know, except us. And if we decide to do it, it will happen. And I agree with you. I think it isn't wise to sit around and think that the extraterrestrials are going to come and rescue us. Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're live on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling? All right. When you call, ladies and gentlemen, be prepared to speak. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. And the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. We'll give it another shot here. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi. I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
We can hear you. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Your first name and from where you're calling. Oh, great, okay. Hi, Mr. Hastings. My name is John. I'm from Brooklyn.
Okay, John.
Okay. I recently read your Operation Bird Droppings and then the follow-up email. I saw Jeff Renz posted on his site. And because you seem to be proficient in sort of detecting disinfo, I was wondering what your thoughts on the whole UN UFO meeting last year are.
Good question.
Well, to be, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I heard rumors about a UN meeting, but I've never read any documented news stories or anything about it, what went on and so on. If you would send, or one of the listeners here tonight would send me information about that, my website, again, is ufohastings.com. It's got my contact information. Anyone who wants to address that question, I'm ignorant about the facts, to be quite honest.
Okay, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be on Final Approach. We'll take your calls. I know you're having trouble hearing me when you call in, but when you call in, we need your first name and where you're calling from. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and to my guest, Robert Hastings. Robert, you know, that whole thing about that UN meeting has been pretty curious, and there are people who seem to be fairly credible people who say they have spoken with, they've met with the source of this information. Who is, I believe, a Navy commander, and they say that they've checked his bona fides and that he is who he claims to be, and yet really solid evidence coming out of that meeting has been lacking. On the other hand, the information was that there would be a program to acclimate people to the idea that extraterrestrials are a reality and that they are visiting Earth. And we've seen certain things happen that just sort of anecdotally seem like it's following that plan, like the chief astronomer for the Vatican saying, you know, extraterrestrials are okay, they're just our space brothers, and then several governments releasing their UFO files. And so I don't know what to make of it, what I say about it is it is, I don't say it is an alleged meeting. I say it is a reported meeting. It's got a little bit more legs than just alleged, but we can't say for sure that it happened.
Well, as I pointed out to John, the caller, I believe his name was John, mm-hmm. I heard rumors and people sent me news stories saying there was an impending meeting, but I never saw anything that alluded to the fact that it actually had occurred and that anyone was speaking publicly, you know, who was affiliated with the UN or anything. So I would simply say this, it's a question of time. It may be tomorrow, it may be another 50 years, but all of this will be released. One would hope that the world governments could get together and coordinate some sort of announcement in, you know, a cohesive way that everyone would be let in on the secret at once in a low-key, intelligent fashion. I wouldn't expect them to talk about UFOs shutting down nukes right off the bat. That would come later, but just the fact that they are here, and I believe that will come. On the other hand, having had a UFO experience in 1967 and having been researching this since 1973, every year there's a new crop of rumors about the impending announcement from Washington or the UN or whatever. And what are we, you know, we're 30 years on, 40 years on, it still has not happened. So I take those rumors with a grain of salt.
A very, very large grain of salt.
A salt mine.
I think that disclosure, sooner or later, most likely later, I think is inevitable. But in a way, disclosure takes place little by little, and has for many years, in that every so often there's just a little bit of information that gets out. Let's go back to the phone for our final call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Don calling from Phoenix. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Don. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to make a quick comment here. Now I'll take the answer off the air. Robert, I agree with you. This money in the water situation with people, whatever their agenda is, which is various sort of reasons, regardless of this greed, or they're employed by government officials, or, you know, I'm sure it's various reasons, but it's very disturbing, man. It's, I run a website, and it's distracting to me to get garbage like this. But once this information is put out there, it's hard to disseminate, because even once stuff is proven not real, that it's a fraud, people still hold on to it, like the Project Circle. Now, we know that's been proven, disinformation, but there's still people who are holding on to it. And the alien autopsy, we know that was proven to be a fraud. But yet, there's still a large group of people out there hold on to information. They want to believe it.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I would simply say it's like any other controversial subject. You're always going to have people on both sides of the issue. And, you know, the point that I make repeatedly is, you know, having an opinion is one thing, having an informed opinion is another thing. Far too many people shoot from the lip and start spouting off about what they think this, that, or the other adds up to. And if you ask them, you know, what research have you done? What witnesses have you talked to? What documents have you analyzed? Were they authentically released and so on? An awful lot of people are just kind of talking off the top of their heads. And, you know, that's fine. That's the world. That's human nature, maybe. But if we're trying to separate the signal from the noise, you know, trying to separate the wheat from the chaff, then you have to do research, or at least look at the work of other researchers who have done the work. My specialty are the nuclear weapons-related cases. I have devoted my life to it. And again, you know, what I publish is on my website and in my book. And you know, I've named witnesses. The documents are authentically released from one agency or another. On the other hand, this MJ-12 stuff, this Project Serpo stuff, it comes from already exposed disinformation operatives. I exposed them. Other researchers exposed them. And all that evidence exists. And the reason I, again, issued this latest article was because a lot of people, you know, weren't around or weren't interested in this in the 1980s and never got to see the first expose on this that exposed Richard Doty and exposed Bob Collins and exposed Bill Moore. All of these eyes have already been exposed for what they are. And at that time, they were engaging in disinformation through the Air Force's Office of Special Investigations. That's all documented. And all of that would hold up in court. Nowadays, I don't know what they're up to. They're either still working behind the scenes with the government, or they're just playing little mind games on their own. But they're muddying the waters. And it's, like you said, there are a lot of people trying to get the good data, the real facts about UFOs, and they have to wade through all of this crap. So I'm doing as best as one person can do who's investigated this and researched it and can document my statements to try to acquaint people with the real facts. And if they don't want to take them, if they want to believe that MJ-12 is real or SERPO is real, more power to them. You know, bend over. They enjoy being kicked, apparently.
Oh, my goodness. Robert, I'd like for you, if you would, we're almost out of time. Very quickly, tell us your website again.
It's UFOHastings.com, and my email address is Hastings444@att.net. I get hundreds of emails every week. I try to answer all of them, but sometimes it takes me a long time to answer them, and sometimes I can only answer in a line or two or three. But I'm very interested in leads from former or retired Air Force personnel who are involved in nuclear weapons incidents involving UFO activity. Those are the people I'd like to hear from most.
Outstanding. Well, listen, I appreciate you being on this evening. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment, and I'd like to talk with you for just a moment after we go off the air. I need to remind all of you that the music you hear on the Kevin Smith Show comes from independent artists only, and most of that music you can find at garageband.com or music.podshow.com. Those are the two primary resources that we use for music. Some of the music you hear is sent straight to me from the artist. If you're an artist and you would like for us to put your music in rotation and use it here, as long as it's you're an independent artist, and as long as you own all the rights to that music and you'll grant us the right to use it, send it on and we'll use it. All right, now let me remind you also very quickly about some of you have written in and asked for a DVD of that show that I did I think it was last week. March the 24th, where I took NASA's own statements and their own photographs from their own website and talked about how a lot of their stuff contradicts their stuff and doesn't seem that all of it shoots straight with us. Well, the photographs, the statements off of their website, everything's on this DVD. If you wrote in and you said, I would like to have that DVD, it's here. And you just click on my website where it says Store, okay? And that up in the upper right-hand corner, Online Store. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.